Okay, I guess, like you said, just go ahead and start out where you were born, and we'll sit here and have a talk session.
Is it already?
Yeah.
Well, I was born near West Plains, Missouri. West Plains is the town seat of Powell County, about 100 miles southeast of Springfield. When I was a small boy, we went to church in a wagon, and there's nine of us kids. We all got in the back end. Dad and mother rode in the spring seat. And believe it or not, we got to church 10 or 15 minutes ahead of time for service. And there we met our playmates, and maybe my father and some of the other children's fathers tell us to come in and time for service. So we'd go in, we'd talk to be reverend, and we heard fathers and mothers pray for their children and pray for the neighbor's children before they got through. Kind of reminded me of the 17th chapter of John when Jesus prayed. He prayed for his disciples or children, if you please. And before he ended his prayer, he prayed for all that would believe. And that included me and you and everybody else. And so they mentioned my name in their prayers, and those prayers followed me 1,400 miles to Eden Valley. And I wasn't converted in the church. I was under conviction in the church, but I was, but Jesus found me in the bunkhouse. That's where I sat with the Lord in the bunkhouse at Mr. Durst. I got out here the 25th of May, 1926, and went to work for Mr. Durst the first day of June. And my first project in the valley was setting out some trees. I plowed with a walking plow, a team of horses, and planted the trees and carried water with buckets until we got a ditch made where we could water the trees. And I worked for Mr. Durst, and last fall, and I had a cousin, Bill Hopkins, who wanted to come back. He owned a business college in St. Louis, and wanted me to come back and take a business course, get away from this hard farm work. Well, I was starting the fashion days. I went back, I took bookkeeping, accounting, commercial law, and they guaranteed you a job and got through. I went out on a $35 a month job. It cost me $60 for board and room. We didn't have modern math in those days, so I couldn't figure out I was going to come out at that rate. So I came back out here. I could get $60 a month in board and room working with Mr. Durst. I worked for him a good many years, and I was out with the sheep. You can call me a sheep herder, a cowboy, or a clodhopper farmer, what you might, but you know, I don't feel bad being called either one, for it was the shepherds that first saw the light when Jesus was born. And I was caught in a storm. I was camp-jacked and froze my face pretty bad. And Mr. Durst came out the next day and didn't expect to find me alive and said he knew I wouldn't have any sheep. I told him, well, we got them all. I had one dead one. I had it. I threw it on the buckboard. Same time, Mr. Covey started Little America. He got caught in a storm there, and he promised God that he'd spare his life, but someday he'd build a haven of rest, which he did. And Mr. Covey, I imagine, deceased now. I haven't seen him for quite a while. My wife and I stopped in there one time and had dinner, and we got to hear George Beverly Shea sing that song, How Great Thou Art. I don't believe anyone can sing it any better than he can. And it was for an appropriate place to sing it, too.
What was his name that guy who started Little America?
Mr. Covey.
You knew him, huh?
Uh-huh.
Huh, okay.
And so Lone Hill, the sheep outfit, he got caught out in the storm, didn't have no coal, and he burnt corn. So after that, he made sure that his herders had coal to burn in their camp. And I was on the civil defense board for a good many years. My duties was to find out what was needed and try to get it during World War II. And coal was one of the things that was being shipped out of Wyoming, and local people couldn't get it. So I've got to give Ann Strand credit for her big help in getting it through, and also Mike Yednick of the college of getting, and also Pat Grandy of getting it through so we can get local coal.
What year was that? Do you remember what year that was?
That's been ever since 40, World War II. Yeah, it's been a long drawn out affair. I took it up with Governor Hathaway. He got his coal from Colorado. It wasn't any good. We got coal pretty near everywhere. It wasn't any good. But we are getting good coal at present time from the Wyoming College out Mr. George Hearn's mining out the old Swanson mine. And I feel that there was others that was in on this, well, there's Mike and Ann Span and Pat and Randy that I'm not acquainted with, but I'm satisfied that the college did have others in on it then. But Ann Span deserves a big hand in helping out on that. And I imagine you would like to know a little something about this valley. There was dirt roads from Rock Springs to Pinedale, and also US 30, which was called Lincoln Highway at the time, was a dirt road. And I took the last cattle drive down in 32 when the government bought up some cattle here in the valley. I had some of everybody nearly. They were pretty hard to drive the first day. They were homesick and wanted to come back. And I made the wells the first day. A fellow named Jenks lived at the wells. He was a road maintainer. And the second night I stayed at 14 Mile. Ray Canton and his family lived at 14 Mile. I understand Ray moved over to Mountain View. I hope he's still alive. I haven't heard from him. But I was treated very nicely both places where I stayed all night. And the next day, third day, I took the cattle on into the stockyard and passed west of KRKK through that saddle right in by the Hilton Hotel and crossed Highway 30 and railroad and up to Blairtown in the stockyard. Billy Griffiths was a band inspector at that time. So then Mr. Durth was in there to meet me with a Model T Ford truck, and we loaded the horse in the truck and came back to the valley. Mr. Hay, the hay place down here at the lower end of the south end of the valley, I broke it out of sagebrush in 1928, burned the sagebrush and got it into production, but it did need some leveling done. I leveled on the west side before I had a horse in the Fresno. With my neck had died, I didn't have no body staking, and I got a pretty good job, for it surrogates pretty good. But the east side was a little rougher. I needed more work, and so they did do some work with Jack McMurray, did some in there in later years. And but asking about prices and things in those days and now, a train fare from West Plains, Missouri to Rock Springs was $26. I took a bus back 3 years ago, round trip ticket was $185. And Stock Growers was the main store in Rock Springs, and then J.C. Penney had the Golden Rule store, the second store he had. And I had the privilege of meeting J.C. Penney one time, shaking his hand. Talked with him. He said that he never kept records with the Lord, but he always tried to give what he could. And he prospered real good. The Lord really took care of him. And when I was caught in that storm and froze my face, though, Mr. Durth, he made the remark that the Lord takes care of his own, which is very true. He was known kind of for his catty remarks, but I'd rather think that he recognized me as a Christian that when he said that. I hope that was true. And there wasn't any bars in Rock Springs at that time, probation was on. But there was a lot of bootlegging done. Wine was made. I understand there was 54 different languages spoken in Rock Springs at that time. And UP had their grape festival. They get grapes in by the car load, and they made their own wine. And as far as prostitutes, I don't know anything about them. I suppose there was some in Rock Springs at that time. It wasn't in my category to hunt them up, so I didn't. But neither was the drinking. My brother did drink. I took care of him a few times, but he had Sporting Goods store bought out one time, and I went in there, and Mike was letting him run it, but I don't know how much he glowed, but it didn't make any difference. If you wanted to blow it that way, that was him for it. But I took him up to Howard's at a cafe right across from the Ross Banks National Bank at that time. I took him up there, the dining room was upstairs, and got him a good meal, and so got him sobered up, sent him back out the valley. Had rodeos in Rock Springs at that time, Labor Day. And I liked to go to those rodeos, and Henry Hittle and Pinedale of Boulder, he done a lot of roping, and Casey Klein, he won the saddle bronc riding, he was first. And I got a friend, a good man, Rodney Pape. He was a good roper, and so was Paul Pape, and a good rider. And I enjoyed the rodeos, and that was the most entertainment we had in Rock Springs. Later on, I was 4-H leader. We had carnival each year, which we had the T-Bone club out here, and Johnny Gosher gave me a plaque to put on the wall there with a carcass of a beef, and showed they were cut where the T-bones were and the sear lines and all kinds of cuts. And we had darts, and I don't know whether they charged anything or not, I don't remember. We had little trinkets for one that hit a T-bone. Why, they got a little trinket for their efforts, but we had a lot of fun with Carl. Some of them had tin pan and different things. It was a mix-up for kids that helped out a whole lot. Now today they have a slave auction, which I don't think is as good as having a carnival where they're going to meet other kids and see how other people live in other parts. When I was on the civil defense, I traveled all over the state and had to have my picture on my label, so they would know me, and they were told us how what to do in case of a nuclear attack. But I had lunch with Larry Barrett, and we discussed it at lunch. We figured that just well, if we had a nuclear attack, you just well kiss yourself goodbye, because there wouldn't be much you could do otherwise. For the stores in Rock Springs, the grocery stores, was very cooperative. Green River to give us some inventory. Even John Copas, the parson, was very cooperative in giving his inventory of the food he had on hand, and Ben's food liner, and Nick Dusick, he had a locker plant too, and he's very good to give his inventory. So we had plenty of food in Sweetwater County if it could be distributed, but in case of a nuclear attack, I heard a doubt if we could have got it distributed around very well. And I worked for Blair and Hay, went back to work for them in 1937. Haytime come, I needed to cook for the hay hands, and so I hired Catherine Anderson to come cook for the hay crew. I guess I liked her cooking awful well for After that, we were married the 18th of August, 1937. And our 40th anniversary, Cliff Hansen sent us congratulations on our 40th anniversary. We got married, but Leslie Miller was governor of the state of Wyoming, and he sent us congratulations through the mail. We appreciate it very much. On our 40th anniversary, we got cards from Edward Halsett, who's a longtime friend of mine. And we appreciate all the cards and compliments we got on our 40th anniversary. We had our 47th anniversary, the 18th of August, last year, 1984. And a good many turned out for that. And we had a family reunion on the Anderson side, too. And we had my son-in-law, he's a photographer. He develops his pictures, and he took a good many pictures. We have an album here of the group, and it was very interesting. So we have enjoyed Eden Valley. Our family started to come along and decided we wanted a home. So I leased this farm from Mr. H. E. Grandy in 1943. So 1944, I bought it from him. And we have been happy here. We raised the three children. Two of them got scholarships from Park School of Business in Denver, and one got a scholarship from DU in Denver. So we're quite proud of our girls. One of them is assistant manager of the Wyoming Rocky Mountain Bank Note, and one of them, the oldest daughter's been with Continental Oil for about 15 or 16 years. She's in Houston, Texas now. She was in Denver to start out with. And her middle daughter, she's in Austin, Texas. She's a receptionist for a doctor. And they've all done real good. Our grandsons, the oldest one, he's been attending school at Texas Tech. He's taking up mechanical engineering. And next grandson, he finished his CPA work. He's a full-fledged CPA accountant now. And he's had three raises since he started his job there in Austin in the lower year. And the third grandson, he's business management, what he took up, and he likes that work real well. He likes to meet people, and he's doing real well. Of course, our fourth grandson is 2 years old, and our granddaughter is 3 months old. So they live in Denver, the youngest daughter of the family. So we have enjoyed Eden Valley. 59 years ago when I came here, 25th of May, and the Lord's been good to us. We own a place. I bought a supplemental acreage afterwards in 58, and bought that from the Soil Conservation Service, and the FHA took over the contract, so we got them paid off. But now, as I've always said, about the time you're ready to live, you're ready to die. I'm 78 year old today, to now. And we're out of debt, but we're getting a little old for traveling around, but we do enjoy company. And we do have lots of company, and we enjoy people coming around to see us. One fellow made the remark, we had more variety of company than anybody ever saw. I was back when President Eisenhower was president, and I said, yes, and President Eisenhower is welcome to stop and have dinner with us if he wants to. So we the questions there about the candidates, presidents and all, I've always said that I would, whoever who was elected, I'd go to work the next day. So that might be a toss-up, really, Democrats and Republicans. I'm a Democrat, but we do get into some predicaments sometimes that seem like unusual. But I've been under both the Depression days. Some of them talk about the good old days. Depression days wasn't good old days, really. I believe the morals was higher in those days than they are today. But that's about the best I can say for the good old days. When you worked for $30 a month and couldn't get paid, you couldn't quit and go work for somebody else, you wouldn't get paid either. So them wasn't very good old days, really. But I've enjoyed Eden Valley, and I just give you little changes. I used to get a pair of shoes at J.C. Penney's for $1.49. Now they're around $35, I believe. And our O&M when I came here was 40 cents an acre, and now it's $7.75. So there is quite a bit of changes in different ways. But we'll just put our trust in the Lord. I'm sure He promised to provide whatever need, which He has done. And I believe He will. I'm sure He will yet. And I just hope that I can still be around, help out as much as I can. I've served as a community man on different boards, not consecutive years, but over 50 years of the time I've been here in the valley, been on boards and sometimes chairman of the board. And it's kind of like our representatives here in Sweetwater County, some of them wants to work on that 55-mile speed limit all the time. There's other avenues that are more important than the speed limit. We should be taught to obey the laws of our state or United States, really, whatever they might be. I can remember when the speed limit was up 70, people have gone 80 and 90, they'll do it again. But there are people are inclined to want to disobey the laws of the land. I served 6 years checking game for the game of fish and found out the same way too. There's always somebody trying to get by with something in the game of fish line. So it's just the nature, I guess, that some people wants to violate the laws of the land. So our Bible said we're to obey the laws of the land, same as we go to the laws of God. So I hope it'll be, and one of the questions in there is what the most saddest time of my life. I believe 1948, when those lake kids got lost out here and froze to death, when I found them, that was about the saddest thing I ever saw. They were laying 15 foot apart, and you wouldn't know you were tracking human beings. You hadn't been tracking them all the time. On the last, where they kind of embraced each other to support each other, I knew it couldn't be very far before we'd find them, and I knew that they'd be dead when we found them. But I saw those kids every night for a week, and that was about the saddest time of my life, I think, that I can remember of. And the Eskridge boys, one of them has never been found yet, but the other one of the nurses told me he never did gain consciousness, and his grandparents had told him to be home at 8 o'clock, and in his subconscious mind he said, "Richard, it's time to go home, it's 8 o'clock, so he was talking never did gain consciousness, so they told me. So it's sad that the children will go out and don't tell the parents where they're going. And so a rescue party, I know, would like to know which direction to go to look for anybody that's lost. And if they would tell and keep that direction where they said they were going, well, it would help out with the rescue party a whole lot to find them and maybe save their life. I believe that about concludes what I would have to say. I do appreciate Western Wyoming College. It's been a great asset to Southwestern Wyoming. And I just hope we can continue to see it grow. And they've been very courteous, my wife and I. We go in there to talk with them about different things. We enjoy it. And I want to give a hand again to Ann Strand for her support and helping get the coal to Southwestern Wyoming. It seemed awful that we had to ship our coal out to other states and local people couldn't get it here when this is the best vein west of the Mississippi River. I thank you very much for the interview.
I got a few questions, John. First here, you said the Game and Fish, when you worked for the Game and Fish, what was it like? What was the Game and Fish back then as you know it, as you knew it back then? What's the difference?
Well, that Game and Fish, I checked Game up here. That was after you were born. Matt went hunting up here. Fact of the matter, along, he told me not to issue any guide permits to anyone under 18. And Matt Griffin, a good friend of mine, wanted to permit to guide. His grandpa was coming out from Missouri, and I told him we couldn't do it. Fella moved away from here down into Colorado, and he come back up, and he was non-resident then. He wanted his brother to get a guide permit. I turned him down. He drove to clear out to Max Long's camp. Max sent a dope back to give that boy a guide permit. So I said, well, we'll open it up to everybody then. What do you want to hold? My plan's just good as Max Long's plan, so we changed that law pretty quick.
Yeah. What brought you out to Wyoming and Eden Valley, mainly Eden Valley?
Well, things were a little bit rough in Missouri at the time. After World War I, the slumping cattle dropped down terribly. My dad got hit pretty hard with that slumping cattle. And it was just pretty rough. And my brother come out here ahead of me a year. He got me a job out here. And I had a desire to be a cowboy too, which is a great ambition. But I did. I made a cowboy, I made a sheep herd, and I made a lot of opera farmers. So.
You mentioned Mr. Girth. Do you have any idea when he arrived in the valley, or why he came in the valley, or when?
Mr. Girth came in here, I imagine, about 1908. He worked for Martin Whaley, herding sheep for him, before he took up here in the Eden Valley. He worked for sheep for Mark Whaley. Whaley was over on the Green River. And then he must have been about that time, just by judging for the buildings and everything. We had rodeos out here at the valley and fair out here. And Earl Foley was a long time resident. He's deceased now, but he got first prize on bronc riding. And Anton Mestis, and worked for Hayes for 40 years. He took it on calf roping. He was Indian. And I have to give My thanks to Mr. Durth, who's deceased, also Mr. John A. Sr., but they were a great help to me in starting out on my own. I intend to go out in the purebred sheep business. Mr. Hay told me, said he'd call me son. He says, son, get you a good grade of sheep. You'll not do better than you will with purebreds. You've got to keep records, books, and everything that takes a lot of your time. He told me right. For one fellow in the valley, he raised purebreds, thought he'd sell rams to these sheep men, but they wouldn't buy it from him. They go to Montana or Washington somewhere to get their rams. So he said that he would be homesick, they'd be coming back to the farm all the time. So I don't know whether that would be true or not, but possible. And Mr. Durth, he gave me some instruction when I first went to the farm myself. He told me, get me a cow where I'd have my milk for my kiddies and all, and get me a pig so that I could raise some meat. So he gave me some instructions to start out with, so I come up gradually. We raised our three daughters, and we're very proud of them. They think a lot of us, which I'm glad of, and see so many broken homes anymore. A lot of times liquor caused it, but liquor never bothered me. I never use it. And my wife, she made me a good partner, and we worked things out together. And we had it rough when we first started out. We were just getting over the depression days, and it was pretty rough. One year I worked for Gus Haneke. I got $50 a month, and my grocery bill was $51 a month, so we had to cut a few corners. And we tried to stay within our means, and we've always held this, that we, the Lord promised to provide every need, and if we can't pay for it, we don't need it. So we have always paid and never had to borrow machinery. I knew when I went to the farm, but I was on a farm, I had to have machinery to farm with. So I bought my machinery. A lot of them make fun of my old tractors, but they have put money in the bank for me. And they're not expensive. The John Deere is pretty simple, they claim, and I'm pretty simple, so we got along pretty good together.
If you can, what was first, or what's Eden Valley like when you first showed up here? Can you remember how many places were here? And
what well, was yeah, I know all of them. I've got a book here that you're probably interested in.
No, it'll be okay. It's a long tape.
I've been attempting to put this in a rocket. The old residence of Eden Valley. Talking about churches, there wasn't any churches in Eden Valley when I came here. I was superintendent of Sunday school for a good many years. We had as high as 120 in Sunday school. With the five churches here in the valley today, I doubt there's 120 attending in all five churches. I hope I'm wrong, but I don't believe they are. And we grabbed a preacher, I don't know where we'd get him. The First Baptist Church sent us out a preacher. Episcopal Church sent us out one. Nazarene Church of Santa Salvan, there wasn't any Southern Baptist in Rock Springs at the time, which I was a member of. We had one fellow in here from Northern Baptist. I was invited to baptismal service on the big Sandy over here. I was with the congregation, the song, the choir, and everything else. I sang songs for baptismal services, just the preacher, the two candidates for baptism, myself was always there. So now we have five churches here in the valley. Yeah. We just hope they are having good attendance and will study the word of the Lord.
Do you remember if anybody saying who's how the valley got started or the reason why?
That book right there is heavy.
That's the whole scoop, huh?
That book right here.
Oh, okay. I see. Go.
I have an encyclopedia here. Stayed a while in two volumes. You'll find I write up in there, any of you that have that volume. Tells about the Carey Act. Carey was governor, stayed a Wyoming. And that Carey Act came through when this land was developed here in the valley. And now in 1902, the Bureau of Reclamation came into law, or they were developed the West, which was good. But they have done so. The fact of the matter, they've overstepped themselves as far as watersheds is concerned. And Central Arkansas on the project, the last 2 years, the only time it's had plenty of water since it was built. We might be a little bit selfish with our water here in Wyoming. I love the fruit and vegetables we get from those other states, and we are a part of the United States. And we can't raise the vegetables here and the fruit that they can in those other states. I went to a meeting, Bridger Valley Electric meeting over Lyman one time with a wrote over the dairyman. He said they should pass a law in Wyoming that they couldn't ship any more milk into Wyoming. I said, well, that'd be pretty nice, wouldn't it? And I said, suppose those other states would pass the law, we couldn't ship any lambs or beef into their state. We would have a lot to consume. I said, we're part of the United States, and I think that's what we should be. The Bible says, not what I say, the Bible says, united we stand, divided we fall. And we should recognize our neighbor states, and not be hoggish on this water to just keep them from getting it.
Yep, that's right. That's good
point. In 1965, I wrote Story of the Valley, Story of Eden Valley. I have the original here, and I suppose I have copies of it. Anyone wish one a copy of it, let me know. I have it in Washington, D.C., in Simpson's office, and also Wallops and Cheney's. And I think the president has one, too. And we would like to get some of these things straightened out, or cost of production is getting too high for the farmer. It's the union was mentioned in your questions there. Unions is hard on us farmers. I have a son-in-law that is a union man. I told him that, and he wanted to know how. I said, well, take steel, for instance, and they go out on strike, go back to work, they usually get a raise that caused steel to go up, and our machinery and parts go up with it, and puts us a little farther out of balance. I'm not against the union, but they've got to see more people than themselves, really. We've got to be, you can't just dwell on self. You you got to see other destinations. Same way with cars. Cars are out of sight for a farmer to buy today. And so is tractors. And get many of them gone broke. Some of them it's their own fault, and some of them isn't. But back when Nixon was president, calves got up to 60 or 75 cents. And some held out for a dollar, and next year took 37. And they had banks that jumped at them to loan money, and insurance agencies, PCA, and they didn't have foresight enough, but they took it, and then they got in the bind to pay it back. And I want to blame the government for it, but poor management pretty much on their part. You take this Springfield, Colorado, or that fellow that foreclosed on him, that was Federal Land Bank. Just throw that word federal's in that. It's not a federal bank, it's loaned to farmers. The farmers foreclosed on that fellow. And he had 320 acres, same as I have here. And he had $350,000 tractor sitting out there, which he only needed one. And poor management has caused a lot of them to go broke. They throw money at you, don't try to catch it sometimes, but it's bad taste.
You mentioned Bridger Valley Electric. Can you remember when they first brought electricity to the valley? Or?
1937.
No, we had our life plant here for 2 or 3 years, mother, more.
Yes, but Bridger Valley did it.
Well, Bridger Valley wasn't in here. I was going to get a acetylene welding, and Joe Colby told me not to. Said the REA will be in here and we can get you an arc welder. So they come in here about in the 40s, sometime in the 40s. The FSA was managing this project at the time, and it turned over to Soil Conservation Service. And then the soil turned it over to the Bureau of Reclamation.
What was your first impression of Sweetwater County when you first arrived? Can you remember that far back?
Well, when I got off the train at Rock Springs, coming out here, it was kind of rainy. It looked pretty desolate to me. I would have been just as good to them as they would me if they gave me the state. I'd give it back to them. I turned out to like the place. I might stay around a few more years and might like it a little better.
Yeah, every year you stay here, you like it a little better. So what was the mountains like when you first, was there trails up there? Or
the mountains, you asked how they were. My brother and I took away the horses, wagon went up Dust Hill Meadows. We pulled across Dust Hill River and camped and went over the bear trap and got the poles. We took the front end of our wagon and dragged the poles out to Dust Hill Meadows. We got both loads out. Then we loaded up and come down real far of the horses and break my wagon, come down Lackey Hill. Got a little bit wise to it. I tied a loop in my rope to my brake pole, stuck my foot in that loop to brake my wagon so that I could drive with both hands on the team. The road wasn't as wide as it is now. It was a trail more.
Same road though.
Yeah, same place.
Up there now.
And we were gone about a week. And we pulled out of there, just Joe one evening, come down the hill, and then we camped on Squaw Creek that night. Then we came on down to Nelson Cabin next night. We had dinner there at the, there was a post office store there at Elkhorn. Wally Williams that run the store. And we had dinner there, little Sandy that rode across, and we come on down to Nelson Cabin, stayed all night there, and then we drove on in the next day down here.
What happened to Elkhorn? Why didn't it ever survive? Or just
well, they changed things. It used to be a mail route across there from Lander and Pinedale, and that was one of the stops. Ralph Baylor froze to death out there. He was carrying the mail out east of Elkhorn. And I don't know, they closed down a lot of post offices then. We had to have a box up here for a while at the road. And then we got this post office going again, so. But they, now they've got the two post offices, really. They call this Farson Eden. It should be Eden Farson. The Farson store is in the old Eden district. That line comes right across south of Jack McMurray's there, right across McGarrell's house, and north of Sweet Olson, there where he is. That's where the line divides the two districts, Farson and Eden. Mr. Arnott had to bring his girls down to Eden her school. He had a Dodge car. He run a store there at Farson. He brought his girls down here to Eden school.
Eden Valley, how did you hear any, how it got its name, Eden Valley or Eden or Farson? Or?
Well, I think it's more of an advertisement, the Garden of Eden. They, Maggot's Beer, they told about Doc Turnbull put apples on some of these cottonwood trees, took a picture of it. Said, yeah, that's what you grow out here in Eden Valley, but that was a false statement. But it's a drawing card, it's all about.
And Farson, they got its name from the Farson brothers?
Yeah, this Farson brothers. Is,
that was, I got it, were they the first in Farson, or?
Out at Seven Springs, you're going to say Station 2. And then there's one on Fire Sandy there. And Catherine's sister came out here from Michigan. We went up Seven Springs there one day, and she found an oxo shoe. There she went up. They're just a half shoe, you know, or see a cow. Had a 40-foot,
uh-huh.
Just a half.
Oh,
but a shoe was kind of on the
front.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I see now.
So, 1937, there's a caravan of about 80 people came in. That's when he was working for Hayes. And he's looking for a grave. This woman, she looked to be 60 or 65. Said her father told her that her mother died in childbirth, and he buried in the trunk near Pacific Spring, and she wanted to find the grave. Well, we found it. It's right up from the hay meadow there on Little Hill. They put up a monument there and stone there by the grave, and it's up on the hill there.
Whereabouts from the shacks there?
Well, it's back this way. You know where the meadow is, meadows. There's meadows there at Pacific Springs, and there's another meadow on down this way.
Oh.
About a mile or two.
I see, it's just right up on the hill.
Yeah.
Okay, there's a mark or anything there now.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Oh.
And right here, west of Barson, out Simpson Hollow, is where the Mormons, they attacked it in the Bull Simpson wagon train. They dressed up as Indians, and they didn't want anybody else coming out to Utah Valley, Salt Lake Valley.
What year was that? Do you have any idea?
It was about 1849 or somewhere along there. 50. And I knew it wasn't Indians for the shooting of bullets, you know. So that's what's called the Mormon Massacre. They killed a lot of Mormons over there.
Huh. I know there's some grave sites out at the Washington place.
Yeah.
Do you have any idea who that is? Or?
Well, one of them is old man Washington. He used to own that, and he sold it to Jack Chambers, and Hayes bought it from Jack Chambers. Mr. Hayes called it the Chambers place. We always called it the Washington. But he moved away from here, and he requested that he died. He brought back here for burial. Well, Mr. Durst told me that a couple of guys ran him by out on the buckboard. They'd had a few nips. Coming up 14 miles, a gasket slid out the back end. They'd come way out here before they knew they'd lost him. And then they'd go back and get him. And that's where the guy started. This country was so healthy. Healthy here, that ship of mine in started a cemetery. So there was no cemetery up here when I came here. I've helped dig practically every grave up here. There's been a few asked them. I've helped dig most of them. Oh, Joseph, you're in all your life. I've dug my animal, Mars is ready. Lord, you got quite a kick out of old Joe, he's talking all the time. And only he was a pretty good old boy. Yes, sir, I was a good man. He's talking all the time. Always in that grave where he got cut. Sorry, John, man.
Hmm. You do.
The Truxtons used to be there years ago, there at the 14 mile. Some of the Truxtons and a lot of things got the bag too.
Oh, Crookston, huh?
Nice for Ashley down there, man. Crookston, I don't see the leader down there. Rock Springs, Sunflower, Crookston Club, Sorting Club, something. I haven't seen it since, but. Stuttering Dick Matthews, Dick Matthews' name, they call him Stuttering Dick. He stuttered all the time. He was one of the first guys I met when I came out here. He was in Hayes quite a bit. He told me, and I remember it as well, it was yesterday, at the first of October, don't wear your four buckles, time on your saddle. That's about true, too. I seen the storm here in October, it was real bad. But
What did he say? How did that go?
After the first of October, you don't wear your four buckles, time on your saddle, time on your saddle.
Oh, we do. For your four buckles?
Yeah.
What's
old shoes.
Oh, okay. Okay. I'm younger, I don't have to explain all this to me. Where did he live? Was he out of Rock Springs or?
No, he had a place that Duke's got now over the sands. You've been over to this place, I know. It's on up the draw, on up east of Lewis there. And he traded it off for an old car. They slaughtered Frank, Warren Slaughter got old Dick Johnson. Trading that old car to that place. I don't know if they made stick or not, but it was, Dick killed a man one time, and he got spelled as somebody's after him. I went over to hunt for him in 1940 when he left out over there, and they wanted some help to come. They gave us permission then to find him, load him on the horse and bring him in. But we didn't find him. I tracked him where he left out from right down to head of Long Canyon. And then he went east and there come snow and I couldn't track him anymore. And then he turned back. I do, Dick, but he always rode the road. If he could, he'd take cross country. He'd go the road. But they found where he'd been in Jones' place on Steamboat there. He's been up there. And so then one of Hayes' herders found his horse that spring. And Dick told me, he said, hold tight horse up, dead horse got no horse on, dead horse got no horse home. Well, he tied his horse up and started there, what happened then. And, but he didn't have any money. He went in to John Hayes, and I knew the horse that he had, and then John Hayes wanted to know what it'd take for a horse. I got $2 left. The old man Hayes said, Dick, I'll just give you a horse. That suits me better. So he gave him this horse and called him Snort. So the firm Medina found that horse, and he went up to the sheep in the spring. And then that fall, and come back, he found Dick out on his first grandmother. Never had found a saddle. I just imaginary on my part that Dick started carrying his saddle. He had a saddle blanket with him, but he got tired of carrying the saddle, and he probably dropped it somewhere, and then he took his blanket and found him. He was a blanket where I found him, his dad had a blanket.
That was all he was saying?
That was all for Bush Ranch. He was under Bush Ranch.
Today without a power.
But the horse, he was in what's called Indian Gap over there. That's where Steamboat and Essex Mountain come by the side of the neck. Horse was down below there on the side of that. So he walked by that way before he died.
Well, it was pretty cold, huh?
Well, it was in November. It did get real cold that winter. We had the Thanksgiving dinner in November. It snowed that day, Thanksgiving Day. And the next day when Harold went over to hunt for Dick, they put out leaves and help, and of course they rode that country home.
He was hunting to take him in, is that what he was doing? Or?
Well, I knew he'd be dead, besides that he'd be dead, he couldn't stand it. He was hunting for him, hoping that he'd find him alive. Oh, they'd always like me. He just come down here, and I'd be flying something down here, and he'd come out to see where he's at. 4 o'clock, he was all gone in town. I'm gonna get this good company all the time. Go quick, come in. I said, well, I'd rather fly a few more around, Dick. I'll go and get supper, and that's where I'm married. Yeah. I knew what I was gonna have for supper. He took spuds, he'd slice them, and he'd put onion in them, and have a little grease in them, and a little water. Cook them that way, it's good. But I knew.
That's what he fixed every time.
Yeah. Well, you know, what I've had, and I enjoyed it. But he was a good help, and then when I just rode to dirt from the sands, he'd come stay with me over there. I'd get breakfast in the morning, and he'd say, you get horses, I'll wash the dishes. You get horses, I'll wash the dishes. But if you get horses and horseback, so that I didn't have
to. What was the wildlife like here, like as far as elk and stuff?
Well, we didn't have any. Didn't have no antelope here in the valley. If you want to see an antelope, you had to go to Jack Mar or Subway Flat or down Blue Rim. There was no antelope around here. There wasn't no deer or elk either.
Not right here in the valley?
No, there wasn't no foxes or raccoons either.
How come? Did you ever figure out why there wasn't there? Just wasn't nothing here?
Well, I don't know. but they said before the valley started, of course, the valley's already started. So the jackrabbit had taken sideways right across the valley here.
Pretty desperate, huh? Well, how come they, wonder why they settled here then?
Well, it's pretty near a natural reservoir, where the old reservoir is. They had to do very little work and had a natural reservoir there. And the Simon helped put in that gate to let the water out. I helped on that too. There's the remodeling. I mean, had the dates in there when that was built. I don't remember what it was, but we put a apron down the bottom there where it was repairing. So we had to let a mixture of weed. Use a slide for a slider concrete down, and then we fixed that. Then we had a cap down, a pump down in there, pump our water out. And we had to pull a pump up with a cable, and let down with a cable. And I pump our water out so we pour that apron in there. There was a fish galore in there then.
Then elk and deer and stuff just were being from the valley's feet.
Yeah, see, they, 1934, they brought these elk in over here, Steamboat and Sam.
Well, they weren't there originally?
No. No, they brought them in.
Where'd they bring them in?
Up in Jackson. And so they stayed pretty well. And then the deer, there was deer over in Sands all the time. And they, since they got this predatory control, see, before the coyotes was getting all the baby deer, baby antelope. Now they got predatory control getting rid of these coyotes while they raise their young, you know, and they move in here. And of course there's more feed in their farm too now, obviously. I had about 15 or 20 does, deer does, and I used to feel over here the other day. On those bucks, unless they shed their horns, and I couldn't tell them from goats.
Yeah, that's...
But, they got 15 or 20. There was a wharf farmer in there last year, all summer, and I told him to stay around for fall. He wouldn't be here this year. He must have heard me. I couldn't find him last fall.
But these Sands elk out here, you know, aren't original. They moved out from Jackson.
Yeah, they moved in there from Jackson.
Did you hunt, when you first came out, did you hunt for elk in the mountains, or was that
no,
a new thing?
No, I didn't, but I hunted deer, but I didn't hunt elk. But I have hunted elk there. Last few years, I had to find their life on the elk mountain. Most of your animals do, and fishing and fishing.
After you got there, that's lifetime, isn't it? Hunter's license? That's lifetime?
Yeah, this is the longest day in the state of Ohio.
But there's not too many of them out, really.
No. Dale's had one, but Mars had one. They're both gone. That's a picture of me.
Oh, yeah. Where is this at here? You know what's this deal with?
That's right there in St. Louis, Missouri.
Oh, I was going to say, them don't go around here. Yeah.
This is one of the two babies.
Oh yeah, I remember that. Oh, she's living in Denver.
That's his two babies?
John, yeah.
Okay, I didn't know about that.
Well, she is.
Oh, the baby pictures. Excuse me, Daddy.
Oh, you're sure. Yeah, it's, I had a lot of them on that plane, as I had to go on the, well, the usual in the wagon, back when I first came here, and then they got those, Dodge commercials, they, giant clothes on the back, a lot of sheet men got them, had to use them for that plane, but it was just, when, them old white trucks had the solid tire on them. No inner tubes, just solid rubber. Bunnings used to have that.
Huh. Yeah.
Bunnings used to haul wool. Out of Nord, I got a picture of that. Where I don't have any head of mules he got on a string of wagons where he's hauling wool in from the sheep outfits in the town.
Yeah, that's where I guess I heard that Bunny made his, that was his first deal, was making money from hauling wool in for the, from the sheep outfits.
John Hay, when I, 1928, John Hay and the Bar X, that is a horseshoe and the Bar X, sure, 60,000 head of sheep there in Bitter Creek. And all these outfits had, that's one thing I've said that, BLM, they put all the restrictions and controls they want to on this grazing. Because the good Lord don't put down the rain, there won't be much grazing. If there's rain, there's a lot of feed out there. And them putting those restrictions on us, see, John Hay don't run no sheep at all anymore. Yeah, Harold got about 8 or 10 head down here, I think, maybe 15. That's all she said, yeah. And in Arndale, they've got them, they've got all the guys down, our mob has cut down. And they just cut them down. I, well, never know what to do. When Luke Rotten died, he had this place where Duty is. And his brothers came over here and wanted me to buy the outfit. And they wanted $125,000 for it. Well, I just bought this place and didn't want to stick my neck out. I said, well, I couldn't buy no 780 for it off by another month. Said, you don't have to have. Said, you've been recommended to us as honest. And let's have it on 4%. And, well, Luke DeBotton had a permit for 426 head of cattle out there. But old Joe gathered 1,305 head. I could pay the thing off in the first year. But that was right after World War II. Everybody was expecting that swamp life to come after World War I. See, cattle dropped down to around 4 cents a pound after World War I. And they expect Earl Cooley, he got scared, he sold all of his cattle. Didn't want to get caught in that slump. Well, the slump didn't come, but the cattle settled out. So yeah, I wouldn't have wanted to...
You better shut that off, so this